Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands. I wanted to give everyone a little heads up about this particular episode with the one and only Jeff Speakman. First thing is that we had a little technical issue kind of early on, so instead of editing it out, I decided to just leave it in, so I don't think it'll affect the episode at all, but I'll let you all be the judge. The second thing is that this episode is going out as a bonus episode instead of the normal episode structure. So, everyone is getting it nice and early. So I hope that you enjoy my chat with Jeff Speakman. And as always, I thank you all for listening and I hope you enjoy. Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about Kenpo and other martial arts and whatever else I feel like talking to. I am Reggie Darden, and today I am at a loss for words because I have a Mr. Jeff Speakman with me today, the one and only, the perfect weapon, the Kenpo extraordinaire. I'm gonna try and keep it together because this is a big deal, for me, on my little podcast, having the gentleman that is a big reason why I do Kenpo and why I love Kenpo. As I've stated on other episodes, I got started in Kenpo because seeing The Perfect Weapon, me and my best friend, we saw the movie and it was like, we got to do that. I've always been interested in the martial arts, and finally getting to actually get involved in it, it was huge for me. And The Perfect Weapon was the match that lit the fire, the Kenpo fire. And I've just been rocking and rolling ever since. As I mentioned before we started recording, I typically just ask, how did you get started and which journey's been like? But, being who you are, that topic has been covered many times. So I'm going to change format here and actually go ahead and skip that. What I usually start off with is just kind of giving a little bit of my background, so you have some familiarity with me. I'm from San Diego, and I started at a school probably in, I'm going to say, 93 or 94, maybe. And that school was of the Tracy lineage. And So I started there, and actually you may know of or be somewhat familiar with. So my instructor, his instructor was Ornette Chicken Gabriel, famous, yeah. Tournament fighter and competitor. Yeah. And so Chicken was my instructor's instructor. My instructor is Pete Salas. He also was, nationally ranked in tournament fighting and whatnot. I trained at that school for about 3 years or so. Got almost to my third brown when I left for the Army. While I was in the Army, I did a little bit of Taekwondo, a little bit of Hapkido, a little bit of boxing, and just kind of did my own thing until I left the Army. Once I left, I moved to the Dallas, Texas area. And couldn't find, I wanted to keep training, but couldn't find the kind of school that really suited me. So I just kind of did my own thing for a little bit. And, as time moved along, I forgot a lot of things and didn't keep up as well as I should have. So I just kind of did my own thing. And then I got involved with my other love, which is capoeira. And okay, did I lose you? Do I still have you there?
Oops. Yes. Right. Okay, now we're back. There you are.
Oh my goodness. Oh, fix this all in post.
Okay. Yeah. So,
right. Hopefully that got on there. We'll see. I was, rewatching The Perfect Weapon as I tend to do. And I was like, oh yeah, I used to do Kenpo, and I love that. And also, along with that, I found my old training book. And actually, you could probably see that in the camera here. Good old Chinese Kenpo Federation. So I found my old manual, and I was like, oh well, let me see what I can remember. Let's see if I can still kind of make my way through things, and started running down the techniques and the forms, and remembered quite a bit that I was quite surprised by. But that relit that Kenpo fire, and I said, you know what, I gotta find me a Kenpo school. So I started searching around, and I found the school that I'm currently training at. And you actually might know my instructor. It's a man by the name of Bill Piper. He got his third and fourth degrees from Larry Tatum. I've been training there for about three-ish years now. Got my green belt again, guess about a couple of months ago. And, just been really just kind of enjoying the journey and looking excited for what's coming next. And now I have this podcast, and I get to talk to both the who's who, the well knowns, and the not so well known people of Kenpo and other martial arts. So I'm just real excited about that. In our emails, we did mention I did interview Carlos Alvarez, who teaches up in Plano. So he's not too far from me. So I'm definitely going to go visit his school when I get a chance. As we're recording here, I actually released his episode last night. So if you happen to want to hear that, I loved his story, and so I was really glad to get to talk to him. So that's kind of, that's my little brief history there. And we're going to, I'm not really sure kind of where I wanted to start, because there's a number of things that I wanted to get into. But I think probably the first thing, in our emails, I sent you a link to a YouTube video that I came across. And it was a testing, testing in front of Ed Parker, and I'm curious to know kind of your recollections of that test. I couldn't quite wasn't quite sure which level you were testing for as part of the test. And just for those that don't know about this video, and I will put a link to it in the show notes, but it was in February of 88, if my memory serves correctly, and it was a testing looks like primarily higher belts, brown and black belts, testing in front of Ed Parker and a who's who of other notable instructors on the testing panel, and it was just good Kenpo at his finest, or at least when I was watching it, I was just like blown away. Just really see people really working the techniques, working the forms, working the fighting. So yeah, if you could just maybe kind of fill us in on your recollection of that test. And
yes, well, those were that was Tony Martin in that footage that you're referring to, who I have as a guest at my Las Vegas annual event every July for many years now. So it's wonderful to be back with Tony Martin and enjoying our continuing friendship after being separated for many, many, many years. And he is an amazing guy, a great athlete, an amazing tempoist. But those days that you're referring to were magic. They were great days. That was when Larry Tatum was the manager of the West Los Angeles School that was owned by Ed Parker. And we were a very, very tight group. Brian Hawkins was another one of that. In fact, Tony Martin, Brian Hawkins, and myself were very close friends and trained together all the time, several times a week for years. And back doing that Kenpo of that age, back in that time, which I'm sure many of the people that are watching this are Kenpoists themselves, like you. And you know that Kenpo is and is intended to be an art that continuously evolves and changes so that it remains relevant, which is a direct quote from Ed Parker and a mandate from him to all of us who are his black belts to continue to evolve and change the art over time so it doesn't become obsolete. Oh, which, of course, as you know, we have done in a huge way with this fifth evolution of the Kenpo system, which is why we call it Kenpo 5.0. And yes, there was a fourth evolution and a third and a second and blah, blah, blah. When I first walked in the door of Kenpo, which was the summer of 1983, again in that West Los Angeles area, even back then, there was a great emphasis from Mr. Parker on evolution and change and growth. And of course, the Kenpo we were doing there under the management of Larry Tatum, we were under the impression that was exactly where he was and what he wanted, except it wasn't. When I became a student of Ed Parker privately at his home with three other people, one of them was Brian Hawkins, it was quite shocking to me how different the Kenpo was that he was teaching versus the Kenpo that Larry Tatum was teaching. So as you may or may not know, I came to Kenpo because of Lou Angel, who was the Hanchi then. He's recently passed in the last few years. But he was good friends with Ed Parker back in the day. And you got to remember, back in the day means late 50s, early 60s. And there were only a handful of people teaching karate back then. So they all knew each other, even though Japanese Goju-Ryu is on another planet compared to Kenpo. Ed Parker and Lou Angel were very, very close friends back in the day. And so when I was about to graduate from the university there in Joplin, Missouri, Angel said to me, if you want to make martial arts your life, then you should move to California and study Kenpo from Ed Parker because he's the best in the world. And so I sold my car to pay for the U-Haul. And in 83, the summer of 83, I moved to California, stay with some friends so I could begin my journey in Kenpo. So the reason I went to California was to study Kempo. And, you know, when I graduated from Missouri Southern, it took me 6 years to get a four-year degree because I paid for it myself. So I had to take time off and work and get money and come back. But I made it. So by doing it that way, when I graduated, I had no debt. I had no family ties. So it was quite easy for me to pack up and move three quarters of the way across the country to just pursue my dream, which is what made me intrinsically very happy, which was the study of martial arts. When I began my martial art training with Lou Angel in Japanese Goju-Ryu, that was 1978. And as soon as I began it, I knew this was something I would do all my life. Of course, I never thought I'd be in the movies and, you know, run an international organization back then. But what I did know is internally, I really felt a deep hunger for the lifestyle of the martial arts. So I was able, I had the freedom, is my point, to just pursue my dreams. It was just like, you know, of course, many people I knew from the university and in Joplin, Missouri, thought I was completely nuts because I was, you know, not even going to have a car when I got to Los Angeles. And I had never met Ed Parker or didn't know much of hardly anything about Kempo. But it was Lou Angel's recommendation that this is the one and only place for me to go if I really wanted to make martial arts my life. So he wrote a letter of introduction for me. And the first time I met Ed Parker was in the summer of 83 in the Long Beach tournament, which I'm sure you know was one of the great tournaments of all time. If you won that tournament, any division, you were accepted as a world champion in that division. That's how big the Ed Parker International Karate Championships were. Of course, you know, that's where Bruce Lee debuted in 63, and Chuck Norris was there countless times, and all the names were there. So I met Ed Parker, and at that time walked up, bowed very deeply to him, and he was looking at me like, who the heck is this guy? Handed him the letter from Lou Angel, and he was so thrilled to hear from his old friend Lou Angel, and he hugged me, and he gave me his home phone number and said, give me about 2 weeks to get finished with this, call me, and I'll get you set up, and you can start your Kempo training. So that was how I made it there, and with that mindset that I moved that far just to study Kempo. And that began the journey, you know, which 45 years later, here I am chatting with you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. Kind of going back to that video, which I wasn't able to kind of make out which rank you were going for, kind of what was the details on that, like, was this already kind of a planned thing that be testing or?
Yes, they always were, of course, and you would do pre-tests and get ready for the test. And that was the time that Ed Parker came to the dojo every time for the brown and black belt, the advanced tests. So, of course, you know, Ed Parker is going to be sitting there just a few yards, if that, away from you, watching you do his art. So think about that one for a while. There was an enormous amount of pressure on you. And then, of course, after he fired Larry Tatum as the manager of the school, Brian Hawkins took that position. And then Mr. Parker voluntarily on his own came and taught the advanced class every Thursday night. So I was able to have a weekly class from him at the dojo, but shortly after Tatum was fired, he came to me and said that he didn't want me to go, or actually just before Tatum was fired, I didn't know that kind of thing was happening. And he said, I don't want you to go there anymore. Come to my house with three other people and study for me once a week. So, you know, that just rocked my world. And what do you say other than yes, sir, and thank you? So that began a 3.5 year journey of going to his house every week. Then after Mr. Hawkins took over the school, he began training us every week at the school. So technically I saw him twice a week for 3.5 years. And that ended right when I got the job with the Perfect Weapon. And that included Mr. Parker in a big way. We choreographed all the fight scenes together. I would go sit at his house several times during the week and bring my notepad, and we would sketch. And once we found out the environment of a fight scene in the movie, then we designed the fight scene around the environment. So you might call or recall in the movie that there was the big fight scene that took place in the Taekwondo gym, which is the one most people remember. So we would choreograph that together. And in all of those times, not only being there as a student, but getting to know him through the movie and all of that, I got to know him very, very well. And most importantly, I got to know how he thought. And exposed through that was how he developed the Kempo system that you and I know as American Kempo. And because I got to understand his method of thinking and learn much, much more about the art and the science and the physics and all of that, I've been able to use exactly that kind of thinking and evolve the art further to now include ground fighting, which, as you may know, is the nexus of the Kempo 5-0 system that we teach. So in other words, what I'm saying, the only reason I was able to, or we, to many people contributed, to evolve the art to include grappling, which there was zero of it in Kempo before, was because I paid attention to who he was and how he thought. I got to know him very, very well, as you can imagine, all those the year leading up to and including the filming of The Perfect Weapon. There were countless numbers of incredible memories being with that man. And through that experience, I got to know really, truly what a genius he was. Because as you, I'm sure, know as well as most of the people listening to this, he was the one who took ancient Chinese fighting techniques and applied American physics and concepts and intellect to them. Hence, that's where the name American Kempo came from, because he Americanized it. He made it a science. So you're not learning Kempo as a function of master so-and-so taught me and I'm teaching you, or his son inherited it, and he's the, you know, which many do, family arts, as they're called, and organic throughout history. That's the way it was. That is not the way Kempo is at all. And so this actually, I have been told and told by him, this was the thing that really brought him and Bruce Lee together, because Lee was also someone who didn't think he should only teach Kung Fu to Chinese people. As you know, he opened up and taught the world, as did Ed Parker. So they were both renegades in that sense, which was a common denominator that they had. And then, as I'm sure you know, Lee studied Kempo directly from Ed Parker for years at the Pasadena School, stayed with him at his house many times, and they were very, very close. And then that's sort of when Wing Chun became Jeet Kune Do, is when you saw a lot of the Kempo traits being incorporated into that. And that's what gave Bruce Lee the impetus and the knowledge and the information to evolve his art to make it more eclectic. And then that became Jeet Kune Do, which quite a bit of it is Kempo.
Gotcha. Yeah, I was speaking with Joe Ribello, and he mentioned that, yeah, good if guy. You look at the movie Way of the Dragon, also known as Return of the Dragon, but it's Way of the Dragon. But Bruce Lee, I mean, he's like freestyle in his fight with Chuck Norris. It's like, oh yeah, there's Kempo all over that movie, and it was like, yeah, I never really kind of thought about Absolutely. That, but yeah, you look at it and you know you see the TSK, all the freestyle is all over that fight. So yeah, there's definitely definitely a lot of the Kempo influence in what Bruce Lee was doing, and that's huge. So rolling back to the testing again, I'm curious how testing in Kenpo is different from the Gojibu that you did, and because something that just that kind of came to mind. So I recently rewatched was it Finding Mr. Miyagi or something along those lines. And it was, you know, the gentleman in there was, you know, trying to get his black belt before before he got to 50, and he was training in like Shotokan or something like that. And I almost fell out of my chair because he was talking about like a brown belt test or something like that. And he was saying, "Oh well, you know, my test was like 15 minutes," and like I wanted to jump through the TV. Said like, "Yeah, 15 minutes for a brown belt test is like my blue belt test was 3 hours, my green belt test was like 5 hours." So, yeah, just how was kind of the testing and, you know, training in comparison, you know, Kenpo and Gojiru?
Right. No, great question. You really have to, you don't have to. My recommendation to be able to explain this to you in the right context is to keep in mind in a compare and contrast Kenpo to Japanese Gojiru. Please keep in mind Japanese Gojiru is quite different from Okinawan Gojiru, which is where it all started. But independent of that, the essential basic strengths of Japanese Gojiru, as it was taught to me directly from Lou Angel, are fantastic. They're wonderful. They have a lot of merit and should be looked at in that way. Now, when you compare the practical application of those kata self-defense techniques fighting compared to Kenpo, they are in completely different universes. And the content of Kenpo is 10, 20 times that of Japanese Gojiru. So I'm saying that because you can imagine in the summer of 83, when I first walked into the West LA Dojo to begin, I'm walking in with that perspective of Japanese Gojiru, and here's this monster art, really physical, really punishing, really just over the top of its application value, in complete contrast to Japanese Gojiru. This had nothing to do with tradition and history. It had to do with effectiveness in the street. Or as Mr. Parker would say many times, it's not about who's right, but who's left. So it doesn't matter, you know, how honorable you are with maintaining the traditional integrity of your art if you're laying unconscious on the sidewalk puking up blood. So you've got to train in a street art for street fighting, which is exactly what Kenpo really is. And like all martial arts, it morphed into, for some people, for a few people, it morphed into a martial sport as opposed to a martial art. So when someone's credentials are they're the, you know, the East Coast champion in 1978, they, you know, beat Johnny Salami in a competition, that's great. And if that's what you're into, of course, then pursue that with all vigor. But don't confuse martial sport with martial art. There is obviously a huge overlap. I mean, we in the Kenpo 5-0 system not only have our own type of continuous fighting, both stand up and on the ground, called 5-0 fighter, but we now, just this year, because we have advanced our grappling skills over the last 10 years, so much and developed our own scoring system, we are now, this coming into 2025, we're going to begin a separate event in all of our competitions, including the World Championship every July here in Las Vegas, to now include 5-0 grappling. So we feel that we've developed our ground game to the point where we can have that as a standalone, as well as the 5-0 fighter stand up and grappling. So my point is, we declare ourselves to be a martial art, not a martial sport, but yet we have a huge faction of sport in our art. But we've clearly have art first, sport second. I wouldn't want any of my students to show their credibility to you or anybody else because they won the world championships of Kempo 5-0. The true spirit of being a martial artist isn't about who you can hurt, it's about who you can help. And that is the operational definition of martial sport versus martial art. I am and always have been in hot pursuit of the martial arts. And yes, I understand it has a sport aspect to it. But when you're a martial artist, you're about reaching for the higher vibrations of what it is to be human. And because I can cause another human to fall or to lose so that I can gain, that's antithetical to what it is to be an artist, a martial artist. So a martial artist would sacrifice something of themselves to help someone else gain. Someone who's in martial sport will intentionally cause someone to fail so they can gain. And so, I mean, that's an obvious thing. It isn't groundbreaking. But what I have noticed is there's a tremendous amount of recognition from martial artists throughout the world when I speak this way and when I bifurcate these two things into two completely different categories and try to highlight how one is different than the other. Not telling you that one is better than the other. I have a personal preference. We now have franchise martial arts schools in 20 countries. So obviously there's quite a few people who agree with my perspective. And it's very heartening for me to be at places where I can speak about this difference, not even the Kempo people, but have them receive it so well. So many times people applaud spontaneously when I bring up that duality because they are frustrated, you know, very happy for the overwhelming success of MMA. Of course, I've studied jiu-jitsu for years. Many of my students have been high-level practitioners for years, which is how we got that skill set involved in the art of Kempo and created that division of Kempo where we now take Kempo to the ground. So it doesn't matter whether you're standing up or on the ground. A Kempo 5-0 black belt should be well-trained in both of those ideas. In fact, you should be able to go from stand up to the ground, from the ground to stand up flawlessly. You should thunder between those worlds seamlessly and be able to deliver the kind of results with your Kempo on the ground as you have been with your Kempo standing up. And that is exactly what we have done.
Very nice. Very nice. I like, you know, you've touched on that before with, you know, yeah, the art needs to evolve. And, you know, it's always been funny to me that, you know, Ed Parker was so revolutionary and, you know, such a game changer. And Kempo, there's all this infighting in the Kempo world about changing the art. And it's like, well, the reason we have the Kempo that we have is because the man that we looked up to changed things. And, you know,
evolved. Exactly. Exactly. Well said.
I just can't wrap my mind around, you know, we should be perpetuating the art versus, oh, well, you know,
yes.
I do things this way or I do things that way or he wanted it to be this way. And it was like, well, you know, obviously he did not want it to stay the same because that's why we have the different, you know, at the school that I'm at, we're on the 16 technique curriculum. So, you know, and it didn't start out that
yes.
way. So obviously there's,
no.
you know, there was a desire to change things and continue growing. And, you know, the same thing can be said for people like Bruce Lee and really all of
yes.
the notable, I mean,
exactly.
you can go back to, you know, the founder of judo and just every known entity that, you know, we look up to got there because they, you know, they changed the status quo. And,
right.
you know, I definitely think, yeah,
right.
you know, there are things that we can hold on to, but not at the sake of not growing and evolving and changing and
exactly. Yeah. In fact, the Ed Parker quote that speaks to what you're very eloquently speaking about is only bring forward from tradition that which is practical today. And that's exactly what you're talking about. In fact, I'll give you a main Ed Parker quote that we use to justify our evolution, and that is, the ignorant refuse to study and the intelligent never stop. A real martial artist pursues change. He's not afraid of it. So there you have it. His direct mandate for all of us was to evolve and change the art that would keep it relevant. Now, the discussion that we should be having that we're not is, how did you evolve the art of Kenpo to be able to accommodate ground fighting? Because that's obviously the 800-pound gorilla in the room. And the fact that you're not doing that and ignoring it and even speaking in a disrespectful way about me or my black belts, like saying, we're not doing Kenpo anymore, where the truth is the Kenpo we're doing is more Kenpo than the Kenpo you're doing. Because you're not evolving, you're not changing, you're not growing, and you're stifling the art. And by today's standards, I would suggest for your further review, is that you are now contributing to the eventual isolation of the art of Kenpo. Exactly what Ed Parker asked you not to do, you are doing. And or if you're a black belt, but you're under one of these big name black belts that you refer to from time to time, and they're not evolving and changing, why are you there? Don't stay with somebody who's doing the same thing that was being done 40, 45, even 50 years ago, where grappling wasn't what it is today. So, you know, the story I told you, by the way, I want to interject here. A moment ago, you said we do the 16 technique system. That was an Ed Parker idea. I don't know if you know this or not, but yeah, remember
I spoke with Brian Duffy. And he told the story, you know, spoil for that episode. It hasn't been released yet, but, you know, I'm sure many know the story. But he did explain that, you know, he showed that to Ed Parker. And actually, initially, Ed Parker was not really, I don't know, I guess maybe he had his mind on other things or whatever, but it wasn't really kind of something he was into. But then a little bit later, once he you know, wanted to get the kids program going and whatnot, you know, this setup, you know, came back into play. And you know, it was on the verge of becoming, you know, becoming the standard,
new standard. That's right. That's correct.
Mr. Parker yep. passed. And
now, the reason why that makes such perfect sense is that the forms that you're supposed to know end at fifth degree black belt. So form 7 is for fourth, form 8, which is the knife form, is for fifth degree black belt. And when you break the Ed Parker system into 16 and 20, 16 for the lower belts and 20 for the brown and black, you wind up doing base techniques to first degree black belt. And then the extensions for orange are your requirement for second, the extensions for purple on through green, which in turn matches the katas that you're responsible. So it's a perfectly organized, sense-based, common sense-based system. That only matters if you teach the extensions and the kata 6, 7, and 8. And so if you don't, then it's a moot point. It just doesn't matter. But please keep in mind that when I came to Kenpo in the summer of 1983, all of that information was available then. So drink that in for a second. For over 40 years, the information of Form 6 and Form 7 and Form 8 and all the extensions and one and two of the sets was there back then, in the summer of 19, and obviously it was there long before that, but I wasn't there before the summer of 83. So since I've been there, it has always been there. And I assumed, of course, if you're going to be a black belt of fourth or fifth or higher, you know all of the information that was very clearly required by Ed Parker to achieve those ranks. And it's stunning to me that probably 90% of the people who are 8th, 9th, and 10th don't know that. They don't have that information. And in fact, in some cases, they only know half the information that they are supposed to know for their rank. So for all of those people who are listening, who are black belts, fourth, fifth, and above, if you don't know all the information that Ed Parker clearly laid out, go learn it. Go on your own. Go behind the back of the person that's teaching you if you have to. Start by talking to them first. But why aren't you doing the complete Ed Parker art because you say you're a complete Ed Parker black belt? And I went for 36 years, think about that one for a second, assuming everybody that was of that rank knew that information, because that everybody did in the world that I grew up in. And then for the last 4 years, I suddenly discovered that probably 90% of the people of high rank out there in the world of Kenpo Karate don't know the minimum standard of what Ed Parker wanted you to know. And evidently, they don't care because they have done nothing to fix it. Even they have sat on the testing boards of my camp in Las Vegas, some for 20 years every year, even 25 years every year, seeing that long before we did Kenpo 5.0, we did all of the katas and the extensions and everything. So it's not like you don't know it exists. Everybody knows it exists. But you are selecting to exclude that information from the experience of your students. And I'm here to tell you that that is wrong. That is wrong. And it is the existential problem of Kenpo Karate today. And that problem deserves a solution. The solution obviously will not come from the seniors of the art because they don't care. They're not going to study it. They're not going to learn it. And they're not going to teach it. So it's up to you, the fourth, third, fourth, and fifth degree black belts, and maybe even higher. If you don't know the complete Ed Parker art, just go learn it. Just go ask somebody to teach you. It's not that tough, but it is that phenomenal. It is that amazing. A huge part of what advanced Kenpo has to offer you, the student, is being excluded from your training for no good reason at all. So please seek out the rest of the Ed Parker information, not for any reason other than when you put on, let's say, fifth degree black belt, to know the entire system, and you stand in front of the mirror in your dojo and you snap your belt shut, that inside of you, in your spirit, you know that you have lived up to the requirements that are very clearly laid out by Ed Parker, at least from the summer of 1983 and certainly before that. Mm-hmm. Just take pride in yourself. You don't have to tell anybody. You don't have to let anybody know. But know inside yourself, inside your spirit, that you fulfilled the requirements that are very clearly laid out by Ed Parker. And therefore, you will honor this great man's brilliant life by honoring him, by teaching the art that he laid out. So for all of you who are not doing that and wearing the rank, look in the mirror and tell me what you see.
Yeah, no, we could definitely go on a rant tangent of craziness about, you know, people, you know, wearing their rank and we could go on a wild ride of that, but I want to still try and keep at least a couple of listeners. we're going to jump to something else here. I mean, man, there's so much that I could chat with you about, but you know, we only have so much time. So I'm going to jump to, yeah, to this. We're going to talk a little bit of Perfect Weapon here. But hopefully I have a little bit different angle than the usual things here. So one of my things that people think that I joke about, but I'm very serious. I have now made it a requirement that I watch The Perfect Weapon before any test. So yeah,
wow.
Whether it's a belt test
Holy
or stripe
cow,
test,
that is great.
I've watched it, and you know, in my current training, I think I started this when I was going for my purple stripe, and so far hasn't failed me yet. So yeah, at least a day or so before my test, I watched The Perfect Weapon. Mm-hmm. But there is something that well, there's kind of a few little funny things that I had about it, but one of them being, at the beginning of the movie, your character starts at the school, and there's, I assume because of the way Hollywood works, I assume that she was supposed to be your love interest, in the movie, the character Jennifer.
Yeah.
But, so when your character started at the school, she was already a yellow belt, and, you know, you're going through your training and whatnot, and when your character gets his black belt, notice that Jennifer was still at her brown, and then, you know, towards at the end of the movie, I'm not really kind of sure how the movie time frame is, but I guess your character was at least, you know, a second degree. By the time he, you know, returns to the school, and you know, at the closing moments of the movie, I'm seeing that Jennifer still has her first degree, and it always, I don't know, I guess it kind of bothered me, or I just my little fan fiction headcanon, I would try and come up with reasons for why. You surpassed her in rank, and I think my latest theory is that something happened with her family, or she had to move away or something, and so she couldn't continue training and had to take a little break, but then
right.
realized that she you know loved Kenpo and loved training, and so she fought her way back to the school and picked up her training after a long gap, but, yeah.
Wow. That is great. Really great.
I'm just wondering if there, I mean, was there, any, I don't know, there probably wasn't any thought about that, but I'm just curious.
The thought that was put into that via the producer and most importantly, the writer was, that they wanted to minimize the importance, relative or not, of rank. So that it was about the person and these were the values of the martial arts. Because even back then, and remember that was 1989, it was released in March of 90. March of 91, because Mr. Parker died December 15th of 90. We finished filming in November, and then he went home to Hawaii to see his 94-year-old mother, and as soon as he stepped on Hawaiian soil at the airport is when he died of his heart attack, so at age 59. So, you know, that was a loss for the entire martial art world. You got to think much bigger than just Kenpo, because this man was that important in the world of martial arts. And I never want to see that diminished, and I never want to see that disrespected. I just received another award not long ago at the IKC, and I stood up in front of all these people who are date back to the beginning of things. And I said, here's the truth. The chances of me having had the life experiences I've had so far, including enjoying the life I have right now, without meeting Ed Parker is zero. There's zero chance that I would be anywhere near this without him. And then similarly, as I explained to you earlier, Lou Angel, because I wouldn't have got to Ed Parker if it wasn't for Lou Angel. And if without Ed Parker, I wouldn't got to the movies. And if I didn't get to the movies, I wouldn't have all these schools. So there, you got to remember where you came from, and you've got to honor and respect that. And I've always been that way. I've gone way out of my way to be that as a human being as best I could. You know, I'm flawed with the fact that I'm a human just like everybody else. And we make mistakes and we have regrets. And you will experience failures from those mistakes. So the one thing I've noticed from successful people is they don't sit in the depression of their mistakes. Immediately, they turn the corner and go, okay, what do I need to learn from that? How can I fix that and not make that mistake? And they move on. So you've got to embrace failure as a part of success. Failure is not the opposite of success. The opposite of success is apathy. You sit back and just take, well, whatever, and you know, then that's a failure in and of itself. Exactly. So you really need to approach life with a vigor and understand that the leading cause of death throughout the world is birth. And the fact that we're all going there leads one to the inescapable conclusion of, okay, within the limited number of heartbeats I have on this earth, how am I going to use them for the common good? How am I going to use that, develop my intellect, develop my physical skills, not for the purposes of self-aggrandizement and buy another house and a better car and blah, 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 but how can I use that success and that learning curve to help make the world a better place before I die? And that's the game. And for me, the journey of the martial arts had been exactly that. And I suggest to you and all of the people listening to think about that and find a way that you can help in a big way or a small way, it doesn't matter, to make the world a better place for the common good of all of us. And more so now, because today is the day that hate is winning the day. And there's a better way for us to go through this, folks. There's a better way for us to do this. And it is not in embracing hate. It's embracing critical thinking, reason, empathy, and really caring for each other and trying to build a life where other people are influenced in a positive way, not a negative way.
I like it. No, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. So, man, there's just so I'm looking. Not usually one to look at the clock, but I mean, there's so much stuff. But there's three, and hopefully I can have you back at another time to get in some more stuff.
Sure.
But one of
you got to do is I'll show up.
Nice. Thank you.
For good news or bad news?
No. That's great. Like, I mean, I could talk Kenpo and martial arts all the live long day. I mean,
I'm with you.
It's
we're that, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. But there's three things that I want to get to before we close out. First one, and I'm sure this has been brought up, but just want to make sure that I get it straight from the source. So the beginning of the form and the beginning of the perfect weapon, my understanding, yes, that was a combination of which forms?
Of four and six, mm-hmm, with one exception. And this is a very deeply personal thing to me, but as you probably recall, in that form, in the middle of the form, I stop, go to a square horse, and I do a series of movements with my hands, static. And those movements are directly from one of the katas of Japanese Goju-Ryu. That kata is called Tensho. So I selected to do that because I knew Lou Angel would be sitting in a movie theater in Joplin, Missouri, watching the first run of The Perfect Weapon, and he knew that that would be a salutation to him, to a show of respect to him. You know, it's when I split my hands this way. And it worked big time. Next time I saw him with tears in his eyes, he said, "Man, my chest was out to here when I saw you do that," and was very, very grateful. And well, all throughout my career, I've always talked about him as I am now and thanked him. And he always appreciated that I remembered him, which is very easy to do, because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be anywhere. So, and I think that's important for all of us to remember, to be grateful to the people who are responsible for helping us in our lives, because then maybe you can be helpful to somebody else in their life and pass on that good energy. But yeah, that was an important thing. You know what? That was the only thing Ed Parker did not see during the filming of the movie. And that was by his choice. So every week during the filming, and of course he was on the set with me every day, even way into the small hours of the night. But when there was a fight scene, he was with me every moment. And but that was the only time he was not on the set, and he died before the movie was completely finished, you know, out of post-production. And so he never saw the cutter. But when I went to his house to show him the cutter to see what he thought, he said, "Nope, I don't want to see it. This is the one thing in this movie I want it to come directly from you. I'll see it when the movie comes out." And of course, he did not, because he passed. He transitioned to the other side before then. So the cut is deeply, deeply personal to me, because he never saw it. He didn't want to see it. And in the middle of it, it had that salute to Lou Angel, which had the intended effect. But yeah, it was just something I made up.
Okay, fantastic. I like that. So this part, or I guess this question, we'll save the meat of it for our next chat. But maybe you can kind of give the I don't know, quick answer. So I've recently started in my instructor training. And which I did, you know, teach capoeira for many years, but this is kind of my first foray into Kenpo teaching. But maybe you can just go ahead and throw out a quick tip or two for you know, not only myself, but those that are newly getting into instructing. Just maybe a quick tip or two to throw out, and then we can elaborate on another day.
Sure. Yeah, the single most important thing about being a teacher is that you understand the very, very basic principles of behavioral management, how to use reinforcement, how to understand and use, where it's appropriate, punishment, and how to apply those things to get what you want out of your students, to get the highest performance from them. And so when you understand the value of positive reinforcement and how to use it and how to withhold it too, not just apply it, you can create a world of a positive feedback loop where you and I are exchanging back and forth of positive rewards, positive reinforcement. I'm a good teacher and you make me feel good because you tell me that. You're a good student because you listen to the teaching and it affects you and it makes you a better person. There's the symbiotic relationship that's important. Forget the art. It's about the humanness of how we can help each other to have a better life.
Very good. I like it. All right. So now we've reached our lightning round and got a couple of fun little questions
okay.
to close us out with. First one being, do you have a favorite technique?
Yes. And I would have to say it is our Kenpo 5.0 version of glancing wing with the extension, of course, which is you're responsible for extensions for orange, which that's an orange belt technique for us, for second black. So that would clearly be, I think, my favorite technique, as long as you put the extension with it.
Okay, very nice. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Yes, on both. I would have to say, if we could break that down, my by far and away my favorite Parker form would be form six. There's just no question. It's a culmination of every single bit of the Kempa you've been learning all those many, many years, all compiled into one extremely challenging form. So that's the pinnacle of the empty hand katas. And then my other favorite form is not a Parker form. It's the one we developed for fifth degree black belt, which is form eight, which is your knife form. And so ours is quite different because we changed all the knife techniques. So we created a new form because it would be ridiculous to do a form with none of the techniques that we do. So our form eight is different than others. But that would have to be my favorite non-Parker form.
Okay, excellent. I like it. All right, and the final question. If there was anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, besides Ed Parker, I'm going to have to start adding this now, who would that be?
I, and this is not a cop-out, but I have been an ardent student of my students for many years. They teach me with how they ask their questions, how they perceive the art, how they perform the art. It teaches me to be a better teacher and a better instructor. And so my students are my instructors. They are my teachers. And they are my family. We actually refer to ourselves as the 5-0 family. By the way, we do a little bit of karate too. So we're really involved in the love and friendship that we have for one another. So we can be there to help each other through the difficult times in life. With the unexpected deaths of loved ones or your family members. We just experienced that a year ago with my senior female black belt here in Las Vegas, Kathy Little. Died at age 52 from the treatment for her cancer. And she was so deeply loved by everyone around the world. It rocked us. So we all came together instantly. We rushed to the side of the other people who are in our 5-0 family, whatever language they speak, whatever part of the world they live in, to let them know that we are here, we are your friends, we love you, and we are going to help you through the difficult times in life. Because suffering is coming. Tragedy is coming. It will happen. And we all need a structure of other human beings that will help us get through those very difficult times. That is what the Kempo 5-0 family is all about.
Yeah, that's well said, well put. I thank you so much for taking the time to be on with me and chat with me and listen to me ramble and gush over over you. I definitely hope we can do this again in the not too distant future. There's certainly want to elaborate more on the teaching side and get more insights into your time with Ed Parker. But we'll discuss those at another point. But yeah, I thank you again. Now is your point to say anything that you want, plug anything you want, or whatever you want to say that we maybe haven't talked about yet. Now's your time to do so, and then we will close out for today.
Well, first, I'm indebted to you, sir. I appreciate this opportunity to speak to people who normally wouldn't be listening to me. And if you don't like what I have to say, just turn your head and spit me out and it's over. But hopefully some of the things I've shared with you and all of the people who will be watching this will have some meaning and will motivate them in some way to continue and learn the complete art of Kempo Karate as Ed Parker designed it. And then once you do that, if you want to change it, eliminate this, okay, then do what you think is best. Because that's all part of the mandate to evolve the art. So you have to decide how you want to evolve it. Only a handful of Ed Parker's black belts did that. I'm one of those people. Even though one of his quotes is, "When I'm gone, I hope no one traditionalizes my art." And virtually everyone has. It's a truly bizarre bizarre situation. But to really be grateful and look at the genius of who Ed Parker was, appreciate it, and show your respect by learning the aspects of the art that have been selected for extinction that you just don't know. So if you know it and then discard it, that's one thing. If you don't know it and then you just want to say, well, no thanks. A bizarre thing to me, because there are riches. There are amazing things that are taught in the complete Ed Parker art that I wish that all of the black belts around the world, whoever you're with, pursue learning the complete Ed Parker art. And then I believe you will have a wonderful experience as I have had.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes. Thank you again so much for your time. I can't wait to get this out for everyone to hear. And yeah, I will be in touch when this is ready to go out. And yes, thank you so much again.
Great. Great. Yeah. And whenever you're ready, just like this time, give me a call and we'll do it.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Be well.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.